Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams Memorial Day Sale and get 30% off paints and stains May 15th through the 28th. Whether you're refreshing your interior or exterior, we've got the colors to bring your vision to life. And with delivery, getting everything to your door is easier than ever. Shop online to have it delivered or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details. Delivery available on qualifying orders.
Welcome to the Divergent Files podcast.
"12,000 years ago, maybe more, a father stands with his son inside a ring of stone on a hill in what is now southeastern Turkey. The light is almost gone. Around them, tall pillars push out of the earth. Some half buried, some leaning, every one of them carved. Foxes, birds, snakes, a scorpion. The boy runs his hand over one of the animals cut into the stone and asks the kind of question kids ask when they have no idea they're standing inside something enormous. Why do we keep making the same ones? The father doesn't answer right away. He's staring at the horizon, at one patch of sky he's been watching for days now. Maybe longer. Then he kneels beside the boy and points upward. A tight cluster of stars, low, bright enough to matter. And he says, because when this happens again, they'll need to know where to look. The boy looks up. The wind shifts. Not much, just enough that they both feel it. Then a low tremor moves through the stone under their feet. The boy grabs his father's arm. They turn. Somewhere out beyond the hills, the dark sky flashes. Not lightning, something else. And that's where we cut it. Because the truth is, we don't know what they saw. A season? A storm? A comet? Well, maybe nothing at all. But the hill is real. The stones are real. And somebody built that place more than 11,000 years ago, long before history is supposed to look like that. So maybe Göbekli Tepe was the beginning of civilization. Well, that's the safe version. But what if it wasn't? What if it was what got left behind after the first version broke? Göbekli Tepe is real. This is a real archaeological site in southeastern Turkey. It dates to around 9,600 BC. Call it roughly 11,600 years ago. And that should bother you right away, because Göbekli Tepe is about 6,000 years older than Stonehenge, roughly 7,000 years older than the Great Pyramid. So we're not just talking about old, we're talking older than the stuff people usually mean when they say old. And it's not subtle. This is not a few stacked rocks and a museum plaque trying to sell you on it. We're talking massive stone enclosures, T-shaped limestone pillars, some weighing several tons, covered in carved animals like foxes, snakes, birds, boars, a scorpion, because apparently ancient people also understood the value of a good thumbnail. And this is where the timeline starts making that little grinding noise, because Göbekli Tepe shows up before writing, before metal tools, before that clean schoolbook version of history a lot of us got fed, where people settled down, figure out farming, build villages, and then much later, once everybody's respectable and civilized, they start making monuments. That neat little ladder, Göbekli Tepe basically walks in and punts the damn thing downhill. Now, to be fair, serious archaeologists have been revising this picture for years. This is not some secret whispered in candlelight by disgraced professors and shirtless podcasters. But most people still got the simple version. Hunter-gatherers first, farming after that, temples later. A nice straight line, easy to teach, probably too clean. Because Göbekli Tepe shows up and basically says, hold on a second. Maybe people were organizing, building, and thinking at a much bigger scale a lot earlier than we were told. And for a while, the easiest way to deal with that was to call Göbekli Tepe an exception, one impossible hill, one ritual site, one bizarre outlier. Ritual is the classic. Usually means something weird happened and nobody wants to blow up their career over it. And honestly, that worked. For a while. One strange hill? Fine. Easy enough to explain away. But before they even finished figuring out what they were looking at, the hills around it started giving up more. More stone sites. More T-shaped pillars. More carved figures. More places that looked uncomfortably familiar. And that changes the whole shape of the problem. Because Göbekli Tepe is not the strangest thing in this story anymore. The strangest thing is that it may have just been the first place we noticed. We were told this was one impossible hill. But then the hills around it started talking. And once the same kind of strange starts showing up all around it, now history has a problem. Because at that point, the question is not really about Göbekli Tepe anymore. It becomes what else is buried out there. The weirdest thing about Göbekli Tepe is not that it's old. A lot of ancient sites are old. That's kind of the whole genre. The weird part is when it shows up and what it already seems to assume about the people who built it. Because most of us got taught a very clean version of human history. Hunter-gatherers, then farming, then villages, then monuments. Nice line, easy to teach. Real life is usually messier than that though. And Göbekli Tepe is one of the places where the mess starts showing. Because this site lands around 9600 BC, right on the edge of the pre-pottery Neolithic, which just means we're talking about a period before ceramics were common. No nice storage jars, no writing, no metal, no Bronze Age bureaucracy. No royal inscription bragging about who paid for the whole thing. And yet, somebody organized this. That's the first real problem. Not that they built something, that they organized it. At Göbekli Tepe, we're looking at massive T-shaped limestone pillars, some weighing several tons. In the biggest enclosures, the central pillars rise to around 5 meters, roughly 16 feet. Tall enough to feel intentional. Tall enough to dominate a space, and tall enough that nobody accidentally drags one into place while out foraging. These stones had to be quarried from the limestone stone bedrock nearby, shaped, moved, and set upright in planned enclosures with walls linking them. That takes labor. More than that, it takes coordination. People showing up when they're supposed to. Enough food to support the effort. Enough trust. Enough social glue to make the whole thing happen. Because even if the quarry is close, and in many cases it was, moving multi-ton stone is still not casual work. It's not a side project between rabbit traps. And the pillars weren't left plain. They were carved with foxes, boars, snakes, birds, abstract marks, repeating motifs. So this wasn't just engineering, it was symbolic work too. Somebody had a shared visual language here, not writing, at least not in the way people online like to pretend every scratch is a secret alphabet, but definitely a symbolic system, a set of images that meant enough to enough people that they kept showing up over and over. Then there's the building history itself. Göbekli Tepe wasn't just built once and abandoned like some weird weekend project that got out of hand. There are multiple layers. Multiple construction phases, enclosures built, modified, buried, replaced. So this was not one burst of inspiration. This was a place with memory, a place people returned to, reworked, reinvested in. And that's where the old timeline starts sweating, because the older simplified model made a basic assumption. First people settle, then complexity follows. But Göbekli Tepe keeps hinting at something messier. Maybe gathering for ritual helped drive settlement. Maybe symbolic life and social coordination scaled up before agriculture fully stabilized. Maybe people were building shared meaning first, and the rest of the system came after. Now, to be fair, this is not some forbidden truth hidden in a vault under a museum. Archaeology has already been moving in this direction for years. A serious debate is not whether Göbekli Tepe is real or whether it challenges the old clean sequence, because it clearly does. The debate is over how to describe what it was. And this is where language starts doing damage. You'll hear Göbekli Tepe called a temple all the time. Maybe, maybe not. Temple is a loaded word. It smuggles in a lot of assumptions. Priests, formal religion, sacred architecture in a way that sounds familiar to us. Stone Age cathedrals, well, it's catchy. It also may be too neat. A lot of scholars use more careful language now. Ritual center, aggregation site, monumental communal complex. Clunky terms, maybe, but they avoid smuggling in assumptions. And honestly, that nuance helps us. Because if Göbekli Tepe was not a temple in the tidy old school sense, that doesn't make it less important. It makes it more disruptive. Because now you're not looking at a weird shrine built by an early priest class. You may be looking at something more fundamental. A place where people gather before cities. A place where labor, memory, ritual, identity, and probably politics started getting scaled up together. That is a much bigger problem than old temple. Because old temple still fits the story. This thing doesn't. So the real shock wasn't that people 11,600 years ago could stack stones. It's that they were already organized enough to build meaning at scale. And if that much social complexity was already in place this early, then the next question gets harder. Was Göbekli Tepe the first sign of that world, or just the first place we caught it surviving? For years, the easiest way to talk about Göbekli Tepe was to treat it like a one-off. One impossible hill, one weird ritual site, one place where the old timeline broke, but only in a small, manageable way. Annoying? Sure. Embarrassing? Maybe. But still contained, and that version's dead now. Honestly, it's been dying for a while. Because Göbekli Tepe was never the whole story. It was just the first place most people heard about. The bigger frame now is Taş Tepler. That's Turkish for stone hills, which is refreshingly honest for once. And that matters, because we are not talking about one hill anymore. We're talking about a regional network. Early pre-pottery Neolithic sites spread across the Şanlıurfa region in southeastern Turkey. Same broad era, same rough cultural horizon, and the same irritating habit of making the older version of human history look a little too clean. And this is not fringe language anymore. This is the official frame. Turkey's Taş Tepler project now tracks 12 sites in the region. And by the 2025 season, project announcements were talking about 30 new discoveries across that network. 30. Not one new mystery, 30. By that point, even the official language was starting to admit the obvious. These finds are reshaping what we think we know about early settled life, ritual behavior, and social complexity. That's when you know the ground has already forced the issue. Now, quick reality check before YouTube starts drawing laser beams between hills. Taş Tepler does not mean all 12 sites are identical. It does not mean they were all active in the exact same year. And it definitely does not mean there was some neat little prehistoric zoning board approving permits for monumental symbolic architecture. What it means is messier. Better, honestly. You've got a regional pattern. Sites separated in space, not isolated in meaning. Shared motifs, shared architectural habits. Broadly overlapping time windows. Enough resemblance that the old isolated miracle story starts looking less like caution and more like a coping mechanism. The star witness here is Karahan Tepe. And Karahan matters because people keep trying to describe it as another Göbekli Tepe, which is lazy and kind of misses the whole point. Karahan doesn't just echo Göbekli, it expands the case. The site sits roughly 35 to 45 kilometers east of Göbekli Tepe, depending on how you measure it, and it belongs to that same wider early Neolithic world. Excavations there have turned up monumental T-shaped pillars, carved human imagery, sculptural elements, special purpose spaces, and some of the most unsettling human representation anywhere in the Tash Tepler complex. But Karahan also gives us something Göbekli Tepe was long accused of lacking: signs of lived space, domestic context, not just monumentality sitting on a hill like some sacred stage set. At Karahan, the line between ritual and daily life starts getting messy, which is usually where the truth is. That old safe explanation for Göbekli, the one that goes, well, maybe it was just a ceremonial site built by unusually organized foragers, starts wobbling the minute you get a place where monumental symbolism and habitation show up in the same ecosystem. And in 2025, Karahan handed the story another problem. Excavators announced a carved human face on a T-shaped pillar in a domestic context. That's not some tiny footnote. That changes the whole feel of the site. Because if a human face shows up carved onto one of these pillars in a lived setting, then the symbolic system is not confined to some separated off ritual zone. It's embedded, which means the people building these worlds were not hiking out to a mystery temple on weekends and then going home to normal life like nothing happened. The symbolic world and the lived world may have been the same world, and that is a much bigger claim. And annoyingly, the archaeology started to support it. Then there's Sy Birch. Smaller site, big implications. Sy Birch matters because of its reliefs. Human and animal imagery carved in ways that feel familiar if you've been staring at Göbekli and Karahan long enough, but not repetitive. Not identical, more like regional dialect. That's what you want in a real pattern. Not identical replicas, instead shared logic. And Sy Birch keeps blurring that same line between domestic and symbolic space. Carvings churning up where people appear to have actually lived, or at least spent real time, not just in some isolated ceremonial enclosure. And 2025 reporting also highlighted a newly found human statue there, which adds more weight to the idea that this symbolic language was not local to one hill. It was circulating. Then you widen the map again, and you have Sefer Tepe, Harbetsuvan Tepesi, Çakmak Tepe, and hanging over all of it, Nevala Chori, the earlier warning that helped Klaus Schmidt recognize what he was looking at in the first place. The point is not that every one of these sites tells the same story in the same voice. They don't have to. They're all adding pressure in the same direction. More T-shaped pillars, more carved imagery, more monumental or special purpose architecture, more evidence that southeastern Turkey in the 10th and 9th millennia BC was not dealing with one freak site. It was hosting something broader, some kind of regional social experiment. Big enough, old enough, weird enough that we're still arguing over what to even call it. And that changes the emotional shape of this whole story. Because a single impossible site can be filed under exception. Academia loves that move. It's tidy, keeps the furniture where it is. A regional horizon is harder to shrink. One weird site is a puzzle. 12 starts looking like a civilization problem. And if the pattern is real, then the next question is not what they built, it's what the stones were trying to say.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
The easiest way to misunderstand Göbekli Tepe is to treat the carvings like decoration. Pretty stonework, animal art, maybe some tribal flair. Ancient people doing what ancient people do when they've got time and a rock wall. But that falls apart the longer you look. Because these pillars are not just standing there, they're staged. And in a lot of cases, they seem to be standing in for bodies. The famous T-shaped pillars at Göbekli Tepe, especially the big central ones in the major enclosures, are widely read by many researchers as anthropomorphic. Not full statues, not carved faces, but stylized bodies, probably. And once you see the details, it gets hard to unsee. On some pillars, there are arms running down the sides. Hands meet across the front. There are belts, sometimes loincloths. Those are not random marks. That is somebody making a stone pillar act like a person. Or something close enough to one that the distinction starts getting uncomfortable. And once you see that, the animals around them stop reading like wallpaper, because the animal imagery is not sparse. It's everywhere. Foxes, snakes, boars, vultures, cranes and other birds, felines, scorpions. Not every species at every site, obviously. This is not a zoo brochure. But enough repetition across enough pillars in enough locations that you stop asking what animal is that and start asking why does that one keep coming back. That's where the whole thing shifts. A fox once? Fine. A fox over and over in a system where bodies are already being implied in stone? Well, that's a different conversation. Same with the snakes. Same with the vultures. Same with the scorpion on pillar 43, which the internet has turned into the ancient world's most overanalyzed thumbnail. We'll deal with that sky fight later. But for now, all we need to say is this. The scorpion is real, the relief is real, and it exists inside a visual system that clearly mattered to the people making it. That's enough for now. Then there's the part people tend to skate past because it's, well, not cozy. Heads, or the lack of them. Göbekli Tepe and related Taş Tepler sites keep producing imagery with severed heads, headless bodies, or at least strong death-related undertones. Mortuary, basically. Death, burial. What a culture does with the dead. There are sculpted human forms without heads. There are carved scenes that suggest decapitation or, at minimum, a symbolic focus on the head as a separate thing. And this is not just modern viewers projecting horror movie energy onto old stone. Archaeologists have been wrestling with this for years because the region's early Neolithic evidence more broadly includes special treatment of skulls and human remains in ways that do not exactly fit our modern comfort settings. So, if vultures keep showing up near human imagery, and headless forms keep showing up, and the broader region already has evidence of skull-focused ritual behavior, you do not have to leap to aliens or apocalypse cults. You just have to admit these people were working inside a symbolic world where death, transformation, and the body meant something very specific, and probably something shared. Because the strongest case here is not Göbekli invented writing, because it didn't. At least not in any defensible way. This is where bad content goes off the rails. These carvings are not proven text, and there is no serious basis for the pillar 18 says God stuff. What we can say, and say honestly, is stronger. Göbekli Tepe and the wider Taş Tepler region show evidence of a symbol system, a repeated visual vocabulary, recurring motifs, in some cases narrative reliefs, scenes, not just isolated animals, and maybe, forms of ritual coding or even cosmological coding, meaning symbols tied to how these people understood life, death, ancestors, power, the land, the sky, whatever framework held the whole thing together. That's still theory space, but it's serious theory space. And the more sites that enter the conversation, the harder it gets to pretend the symbolism is local or accidental. Because newer finds across Taş Tepler keep reinforcing the same basic pattern. More human figures, more face reliefs, more sculptural fragments and wall-associated deposits, more hybrid spaces where domestic context and symbolic content keep bleeding into each other. Karahan gives us carved human presence in spaces that do not behave like neatly separated temples. Cy Birch gives us reliefs that feel related without being identical. Other sites keep adding pieces of the same broad symbolic grammar. That's the word that matters here. Not an alphabet, not writing. More like grammar. a system where forms repeat, mutate, and still seem to belong to the same cultural language. And that changes the emotional temperature of the whole site. Because if the pillars are bodies, or something close to bodies, and the animals keep showing up like recurring symbols, and the headless imagery ties into death, or transformation, or both, well then Göbekli Tepe is not just monumental architecture, it's a staged world, a place where identity, memory, death, and power were being acted out in stone. And once the carvings stop looking decorative, you have to ask what they were trying to preserve. Because the minute symbols start behaving like a system, the next fight is whether that system was pointing down at the dead or up at the sky. If there's one object at Göbekli Tepe that has launched more late-night YouTube spirals than anything else, it's Pillar 43, the Vulture Stone. And before anybody starts freebasing constellations in the comments, let's do this in the right order. First, the stone is real. The carvings are real. This is not one of those situations where somebody zooms into a blurry documentary screenshot and suddenly finds Atlantis in 3 pixels. Pillar 43 is a real limestone pillar from Enclosure D at Göbekli Tepe, and it is genuinely weird before anybody starts drawing lines between stars. You've got a large bird or vulture-like figure, a scorpion, other animals, marks that still don't have a clean consensus, and the whole thing feels arranged on purpose. It looks deliberate. That part matters. Because even if you know nothing about astronomy, the Vulture Stone already feels like a message from a symbolic system we do not fully understand. That much is not controversial. The fight starts when people ask what kind of message. One of the best known interpretations, especially online, comes out of the Martin Sweatman's line of argument. This is the version that sends the internet into orbit. The basic claim is simple enough. Some of the animals may map to constellations. The scorpion gets linked to Scorpius, which is the one even normal people can look at and go, "All right, I see what you're doing." From there, the theory gets bigger. And some of these animals are celestial markers. Then the pillar may not just be symbolic. It may be astronomical. And if it's astronomical, then maybe it is doing more than showing animals. Maybe it is encoding sky knowledge. Maybe timing. Maybe a remembered event. Or maybe, if you push it hard enough, a catastrophe memory tied to the Younger Dryas argument we're about to walk into. That's the full catnip kit. Ancient sky map, comet memory, prehistoric warning system. Because this is where discipline matters. There is a real scholarly argument here. There is also a mountain of internet inflation stacked on top of it. Sweatman and others have argued for celestial symbolism, maybe even a kind of date-coded sky reference. That is serious enough to discuss. It is very much not settled, not even close. A lot of archaeologists do not accept the astronomical decoding as proven. And the reason is not because they're scared of the stars. It's because the method has real problems. A scorpion matching Scorpius? Sure, maybe. That one at least passes the first smell test. But once you start mapping every animal one-to-one onto a modern constellation set, things get slippery fast. Because the human brain is basically a conspiracy machine with a mortgage. It wants patterns. Sometimes it finds them. Sometimes it manufactures them and then acts offended when you ask for receipts. And then there's precision. Online, you'll hear that Pillar 43 gives an exact date. Or that Göbekli Tepe was definitively aligned to Sirius. Or that the whole site is basically a prehistoric observatory with a disaster memo carved into it. And that is where it starts getting sloppy. There are serious arguments for celestial interest at Göbekli Tepe. That part is fair. There are also arguments about alignments and precession, meaning the sky shifts over long stretches of time because Earth does a slow wobble. That's also fair. But the strong internet version, where all of this is nailed down to exact alignments, exact dates, and exact comet trajectories, well, no, that is not where the evidence is, at least not yet. And honestly, the better question is not, did we crack the code? It's this. Why does this one pillar keep surviving the skepticism? Because even after you strip away the overreach, it still refuses to become ordinary. That's the issue. Even the cautious version leaves you with a stone that looks intentionally arranged, symbolically dense, clearly part of a broader visual grammar, and possibly, but not definitely, but possibly, tied to sky knowledge. And if that's true, even in a limited sense, the implications spread fast. Because now Göbekli Tepe is not just a place where people gathered, carved animals, and buried structures. Now you have to consider that some of those carvings may have been doing more than just showing animals. They may have been tracking relationships, maybe seasons, maybe ritual timing, maybe sky knowledge, or maybe memory. We cannot prove all of that from one pillar. We should not pretend we can. But we also should not pretend the whole idea is ridiculous just because the internet wrapped it in 10 layers of nonsense and slapped a comment on the thumbnail. So, here's the line that actually holds. The Vulture Stone is either one of the oldest symbolic sky records we've ever found, or a very famous case of humans forcing patterns into a very weird rock. And annoyingly, both possibilities are very interesting. Because if the sky reading is wrong, Göbekli Tepe is still extraordinary. But if even part of it is right, then the whole site changes category. And once you let that possibility in, you can't avoid the next question. If these people were watching the sky closely enough to carve it, what exactly did they think was coming out of it? By the time people start talking about Göbekli Tepe and comets, the conversation usually goes off the rails fast. So before we light that match, we need to separate two things people keep jamming together. First, the Younger Dryas is real. Second, the Younger Dryas impact hypothesis is real as a hypothesis. Those are not the same sentence. The Younger Dryas was an abrupt climate reversal that kicked in around 12,900 years ago. The planet had been warming as the last ice age started loosening its grip, and then conditions snapped colder again in a lot of places. Not forever, but hard enough and fast enough that paleoclimate researchers still treat it as one of the nastier turns at the end of the ice age. That colder phase lasted roughly 1,200 years, ending around 11,700 years ago. And here's why that matters. Göbekli Tepe starts showing up right near the far edge of that chaos. Not in the middle of some long, stable golden dawn. Right near the end of a brutal transition. That does not prove anything by itself. But still, it's not nothing. Because if you're trying to understand why people suddenly gather, organize, carve, build, repeat, and pour huge labor into symbolic communal spaces, well then timing matters a lot. Especially when that timing lines up with a world that had just been through serious ecological stress. We're not talking about the weather got weird for a season. We're talking about real instability, cold swings, resources shifting, the kind of pressure that can crack old ways of living. Different regions felt it differently, sure. This was not one giant global disaster movie where everybody stared at the same burning sky. You do not need dragons. Now, the part everybody wants, the impact hypothesis. This is the idea that something from space, maybe fragmented, maybe air bursting, may have triggered or worsened that transition. Supporters point to things like microspherules, platinum anomalies, melt glass, and other heat-related markers near the Younger Dryas boundary. In plain English, traces some researchers think look impact-like. One of the biggest battlegrounds in that fight is Abu Huraira in modern Syria. That site matters because it's a real prehistoric settlement tied to people living through the transition, and some researchers argue parts of the evidence there show extreme heat beyond ordinary fires. That's why it keeps getting dragged back into this argument. If you're trying to argue that something violent happened near the Younger Dryas onset, a lived site with unusual thermal evidence is a serious thing to point at. But this is still controversial, very controversial. Critics argue the evidence is inconsistent. Some boundary markers do not replicate cleanly across sites. Some supposed impact proxies may have other explanations. and some of the datasets have been challenged on method, contamination, interpretation, sometimes just plain overreach. And because this is science, which means human beings with grants and eagles throwing sharpened spreadsheets at each other, the debate has stayed hot for years. So where does that leave us? Well, honestly, in a better place than most people realize. Because you do not need a fully proven comet apocalypse to ask the serious question. You only need the part that already holds. A real abrupt climate shock. A real period of human stress. A real transitional window. And then, right near the end of it, one of the strangest monumental building traditions ever found shows up in Upper Mesopotamia. That's enough. That alone should make you sit up. Because once you stop treating Göbekli Tepe like a random anomaly and start placing it inside the emotional logic of survival, the whole site changes. Now the carvings are not just weird. The gatherings are not just impressive. The repetition is not just ritual. Now you have to consider a much older human pattern. People build differently after trauma. They remember differently too. Sometimes memory gets written down. Sometimes it gets ritualized. Sometimes it gets built into a place because the people who saw it won't be around forever. That does not prove Pillar 43 is a comet diagram. It does not prove the Vulture Stone is a date-stamped disaster report from the Stone Age. But it does make one thing feel a lot more plausible. If communities in this region inherited memories of instability, cold, famine, migration, strange skies, flooding, fire, or just a generational fear of a world that stopped behaving, then building a place like Göbekli Tepe starts to make a different kind of sense. Not because they were documenting one clean event, because they were trying to stabilize meaning after a world that stopped making sense. And that's where the comet argument gets interesting again. Not as certainty, more like pressure. Because once you admit late Ice Age people may have lived through the kind of environmental chaos that becomes myth, well, then the question changes. It's no longer, did they literally carve a comet strike into stone? It becomes, how much of catastrophe memory survives after the details rot away? And that's where the torrid meteor stream starts lurking at the edge of the conversation. Not because we've proven it did this, because it's one of the recurring celestial suspects people keep dragging back into the frame whenever they try to explain how a sky event could echo across generations. For now, the important part is simpler. Maybe they weren't recording the exact day the sky ended the world. Maybe they were building after the kind of chaos that makes people think it did. And if that's true, then the next question isn't just what happened in the sky. It's what happened to the people who made it through. Here's the part of the Göbekli Tepe story that should bother you more than the age, more than the carvings, maybe even more than the sky stuff. They buried it. Not all at once. Not like somebody dumped a wheelbarrow of dirt on a weekend and called it sacred. But the major enclosures at Göbekli Tepe were intentionally backfilled. That part is real, not fringe. Not just YouTube garnish. The major enclosures, especially the earlier monumental ones, ended up filled with material archaeologists do not usually treat as simple natural collapse. Because ruins happen, walls fail, stone shifts, sediment builds up, time does what time does. But Göbekli Tepe does not just look abandoned. In key areas, it looks closed. And once that clicks, the site changes again. Because now the question is not just who built this. Now it's, why would they cover it up themselves? And also the fill matters here a lot. This was not just some wind-blown dust or one convenient landslide that somehow buried the weirdest place in the region. The backfill was a mix of rubble, stone, soil, debris, and cultural material. In plain English, moved stuff. Stuff that piled up in ways that look active, not accidental. That does not automatically mean there was some dramatic seal the chamber moment with priests chanting while the sky turned red. Human beings love to stage ancient life like every day ended with a ritual drum solo. But it does mean this was probably deliberate. And once you say that out loud, the serious interpretation starts showing up. A lot of archaeologists lean towards some version of ritual closure, decommissioning, or sight transformation. Dry words, simple meaning. This place may have been intentionally retired. Not smashed in panic, not necessarily hidden from enemies, just brought to an end on purpose. And that is a big difference. Because in early ritual architecture, and honestly, in a lot of human cultures, sacred or socially important spaces are not always abandoned the way we abandon a strip mall. Sometimes they're closed. Sometimes they are renewed by burying an old phase and rebuilding a new one. Sometimes the act of covering a place is part of the place. And Göbekli Tepe gives you reason to think that way because the site does not show one clean life cycle. It shows multiple building phases. Enclosures get made, used, then filled. Later phases show up, often smaller, often different. That suggests continuity, sure, but also change. Not some sudden apocalypse at the site level, not a simple walk away either. More like a changing relationship between people and place. That's the careful read, and honestly, it's strong enough. Because even without getting weird, we are already looking at a community, or maybe a set of communities, that invested huge labor into monumental symbolic architecture, and then, at least in some cases, chose to bury the earlier phases instead of just leaving them standing. That is not ordinary behavior. That is memory behavior. That is curation. Maybe preservation, or maybe transformation. Could be both. And this is exactly why the fringe version keeps surviving. Because it piggybacks on something very real. You'll hear people say they were preserving a warning. They were hiding dangerous knowledge. They knew no one would be left to guard it. Do we know that? No, not remotely. That is story space, not evidence space. But here's the problem for the skeptics, and honestly, it's fair. Those theories keep working because the core fact is already strange enough to carry them. You do not have to believe they buried a secret. It is enough to admit they buried something that mattered. And if you've been following the trail so far, that lands even harder now. Because this was not one weird monument. It was part of a broader regional system. People kept building, carving, gathering, and changing how these spaces worked over time. So the backfill may not be a panic move. It may be something slower and honestly, more unsettling. A deliberate act of cultural editing. One phase of memory covered by the next. One world literally placed on top of another. That idea should make you uneasy. Because once a culture starts burying its own monumental past, the question is no longer just what they feared. It's what they wanted the future to find, or maybe what they didn't. And that is where the whole episode starts bending again. Because if Göbekli Tepe was not left as a ruin, but managed as a buried space, then we may not be looking at the remains of a lost world. We may be looking at what the world chose to save. And once a site starts looking less like ruins, and more like a sealed archive, the next question gets uncomfortable. Who exactly was the archive for?
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
By now, people usually want the big answer. Atlantis, comet map, lost super civilization. Maybe, maybe not. But if we're being honest, the part that actually holds up is stranger than the internet version. Göbekli Tepe is real. It's older than the old timeline liked. It was not alone. And the more this region gets studied, the harder it gets to pretend we're looking at one weird hill. That's the part I can't shake. Because if this really was the beginning of civilization, it has a weird way of feeling like aftermath. Like people weren't inventing meaning from scratch. More like they were trying to hold on to it. I don't think they were trying to tell us who ruled the ancient world. Honestly, it feels smaller than that, more human. Like they were trying to make sure the next world remembered what the last one forgot. And that lands a little too close to home. because civilization is not some permanent upgrade. It's a phase, a good one when it works, still fragile. And maybe the message was never that complicated. The world can change fast, and memory dies unless you pin it to stone, ritual, story, something heavier than a lifetime. If the first great lesson of civilization was carved in stone and buried on purpose, what are we still refusing to learn from it now? Because if that lesson was there from the beginning, we're still late to it. We've uncovered the past, and these are the shadows it left behind. Thanks for being here tonight. If you want more stories like this, you know where to find me, you know where the links are. And if you choose to support the channel, it really helps. I'll see you next time.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details.